Torah Majda Yud Dalet Iyo Toshin Ayin Ches Reb Chaim Matcha Bonnet.
Pshus Kol HaKol HaKodesh Hazeh. The Maseiach Yisharim writes in the Tum Ba Nikias, Issa Ribbis, Eini Roya Tzirich Leharich Bozesh, Kva Imosu Imuteles HaKodesh Yisrael. When this guy comes to the Issa Ribbis, there's no need to dwell too much on it. Everyone's careful from the Issa Ribbis, everyone stays far away. This is true Adayim Hazeh, people stay far away from the Issa Ribbis. However, the problem arises when people don't realize what's included in ribbis, what is ribbis, what's not ribbis. So today we'll bring a few cases which, on the first glance, could seem fine, but could really involve a serious shailas of ribbis. Just a short introduction, the Shulchan Aruch says, somebody who's malve ribbis, somebody who lends money ribbis, is over on 6 lavim, and even somebody who borrows ribbis is over on 3 lavim. Also, somebody who's involved in arranging a loan of ribbis is over on Zechon Lifnei Iver, Kenzai, and Zal Lavim also. Everyone knows the din is to borrow money from a goy, ribbis, mutagom, no problem at all. So we have somebody, let's call him Ruvain, wants to buy a house, tries a hint and tries that he can't get a mortgage. So he goes to his father. So you can get a mortgage. So you buy the house under your name. You take out the mortgage, and I'll pay all the mortgage payments. You won't have to pay a penny. You won't have any achrayas. I'll even pay it direct to the bank if you do such a thing. Or I'll pay it to you, and you'll pay it to the bank. Is there any issue here? Should seem fine. The one who's taking out the mortgage, Yaakov, he's borrowing money from a bank, a goy, beribis. And whatever he has to pay to the bank, he's going to pass on to his son, to Reuven, to pay. However, it's not that posh at all, because there's two separate loans going on here. The one who's borrowing from the bank, Yaakov, he's fine and dandy. He can take a loan, he can pay ribbis to the bank, no problem with that. Then when the son buys the house, he's lending money to his son. By buying the house for his son, and al pi halacha, the house is going to belong to the son. So that's a loan to the son. So you could say, what's the problem with that? The son's not paying any ribbis to his father, he's paying the ribbis directly to the bank. But it doesn't help. The halacha Shulchan Aruch is somebody who lends Reuven, Yaakov lends money to Reuven, and tells Reuven, don't pay me the ribbis, pay the ribbis to someone else. It's still ribbis ketzutzo. So this case for Yaakov to be taking out a mortgage and then to buy the house for Reuven, this will be a shail of ribbis ketzutzo, which not only a problem chatchila, that means to go ahead and do it would be a problem of ribbis. Even if it's been done 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, every payment he's making is a shail of ribbis ketzutzo. We'll see soon what's the eitzah to take out mortgage and not to get involved in shailas of ribbis. The same scenario would be if Reuven wants to buy a ticket to Eretz Yisrael. And it's good for his father. He wants the points from his credit card, so he uses his father's credit card to buy the ticket. And he doesn't pay up on time, and his father has to pay interest to the credit card company. And then Reuven pays back his father the interest that he had to pay the credit card company. Bye to ribbis. The credit card company have lent money to Yaakov. They don't know Reuven exists b'chol. And then when Reuven pays back his father the ribbis, that's a payment of ribbis. Next case will be like this. What happens if, again, Reuven wants to buy a house, he can't get himself a mortgage. So, I believe there's another eitzah that involves he buys house together with his father Yaakov. So, as far as the bank are concerned, 99% of the house is going to be bought by Reuven, 1% of the house is going to be bought by Yaakov. This already seems much better. The bank are lending money to Reuven also because they know Reuven. But this case also not very poshut because al pi halacha we look at it as each one's borrowing 50%. Because the bank are lending to two people collectively, they're lending to Reuven and to Yaakov. So Reuven has borrowed 50% and Yaakov's borrowed 50%. 50% that Yaakov borrowed, what did he do with it? He bought 1% of the house. What did he do with all the 49% of the money he borrowed? He lent it to his son. What did he tell his son to do? Please pay my mortgage to the bank. So really he's got himself in the same situation again. He's borrowed money from the bank Barabbas, that's Mutter. And then he's passed on that charge. He's lent money to his son and asked him to pay, please pay my bill to the bank. That's true. So, but still, one bar of 50%. That makes things worse. Yes, that's true. We'll get that soon. That, even once we get around this problem that I spoke about, you'll have that problem also. So let's get the third case and we'll see that's negated that case. Third case is Reuven, this time, is taking out the mortgage himself, full mortgage himself. But the bank want a guarantor. So that's fine. Reuven's going to borrow the whole mortgage and Yaakov is guaranteeing the mortgage. So here, Lucher, it's fine. The whole loan is going to Reuven, but Yaakov's not borrowing from the bank anything. So for this, the problem with this is the halachas of Orev. There's three types of guarantors. You can have a guarantor where you can only claim money from him after you've been to the loiver. First you go to the one who borrowed the money, you ask him to pay, he doesn't pay, then you go to the guarantor. Then you can have a guarantor, then you go to either or. The malva's got a choice of going to him or to him, equally. That's called the Arev Kablan. And then you have another type of Arev which you meet in Ribbis, which is the Arev Shluftutz, which means that the one who lends money is going to go straight to the Arev only. So it's passing a Shulchan Aruch that even though a goy can lend money to Yid Beribis, but it's also to be an Arev Kablan on such a loan. So here when Reuven takes out the mortgage, so he's borrowing money from the bank. Now Yaakov is being a guarantor. The bank are not bound to go to Reuven first. As far as they're concerned, they go straight to Yaakov. In most situations, it won't be worth it for them. They prefer to go, hopefully the mortgage will get paid, and if it doesn't get paid, they'll go first to Reuven or to the house. But theoretically, they could go to Yaakov. Like, so Yaakov signed as an Arev Kablan on a Chayv Sharibis. What's the problem of being an Arev Kablan? He didn't borrow the money, Reuven borrowed the money, he's just guaranteeing the Chayv. So the person explained that in the event that Reuven can't pay up the loan, then I'm afraid we look, and the bank come to the Arev and ask him to pay up the loan, we look at it as if the bank has lent money to the Arev and he passed on to the Leiva. But not only is it a problem in the event that the Arev pays up the loan, even to sign mitchila as an Arev is a problem. So even this third case where Reuven is borrowing the money and Yaakov is signing as a guarantor would also be a problem. Truth is, this is a very, very common shaila, and much more common than people realize. Because like Mr. Sandler just said, that every time two people sign on a mortgage together, they're jointly and severally liable for the whole loan. So al pi halacha, when two people sign on such a loan together, we look that each one's borrowed 50% and he's a guarantor on the other 50%. So again, you've run into the problem of a guarantor. Two business partners take a loan from the bank, each one is jointly and severally liable. So he's borrowed 50% of the money and he's guaranteed 50% of the money, and the other partners also borrowed 50% and guaranteed 50%. So every situation like this you're going to run into a problem of Arvus, of guaranteeing a loan of Ribbis. Now I guess even a bigger chiddush, every time a husband and wife sign on a mortgage together, L'chayish should have the same problem. They've jointly signed on a mortgage. They're both accepting responsibility on 50% of the loan and guaranteeing the other one's 50% of the loan. This is Machlokes al Poskim. Rabbi Yashiv says it's okay, but a lot of Poskim say that it's also a problem. Moshe Shtenbuch and the case of Rav told me and other Rabbanim that it's a problem. So we'll see in a minute what the Eitzes get around it. So let's start with the last case. What's the Eitzes? You want to sign a... Either they want to sign a mortgage together, or he signed the mortgage and he wants a guarantor on his mortgage. How can you get around the problem of Orev Kablan? So the person say that the Eitzes would be that, like we said, the whole problem of Orev Kablan is that when the Orev pays the bank, we look at it retroactively that he's the one who borrowed money from the bank and he lent it to the other one, Barabbas. So the Eitzes would be that before they start, before they agree, before they sign, they agree that in the event that the bank would come to the Orev, the Orev will not come back and claim back from the Loive. Even if he will claim back from the Loive, he won't claim back Ribbis from the Loive. So there won't be any Ribbis going between the two of them. It would seem that this Eitzah should be implemented not only before an Orev Kablan signs, but even if they've already signed and it hasn't come to the situation where the Orev has paid the bank, they should make an agreement between them that they will never claim Ribbis back from each other. So that would be the Eitzah for the last case where Reuven took out the mortgage and he had a guarantor to sign, or two people took out a mortgage together, each one's borrowing half and there's a guarantor on the other half. They should agree that they won't claim back Ribbis one from each other. It seems the Rishonim say that no, each one's borrowed 50%. I don't know how the banks look at it. And definitely makes a difference for the banks. The main thing for the bank is they can claim 100% from each one. But Pi Halacha, they each borrowed 50% and they've guaranteed the other 50%. Yeah. Now let's go back to the first Shaila where Reuven took out the mortgage. Sorry, other way around. Yaakov took out the mortgage and he bought the house for Reuven, thereby lending money to Reuven, and Reuven's going to pay all his payments. Mamshu Shaila of Ribbis Ksutza. So the Eitzah L'chatchila would be that we should make sure that Api Halacha, the house should belong to Yaakov. If the one who takes out the mortgage, he's the one buying the house Api Halacha, so he's taken out a mortgage, bought his own house, and he's spent the money. Then he's got a nice house. You can go to Reuven and say, you want to rent my house? You can live in my house, pay rent. How much rent? However much I'm paying to the bank, that much how much the rent is. The chisaron with this Eitzah is that people are Boba Lachmei Vesrim. So now, Pi Halacha, the house belongs to the father. So Lachmei Vesrim goes to his Yerushim. Obviously, he's not interested in paying a mortgage for 35 years and then losing the house. So there are the Eitzahs for that, which it can be avoided. But Mitzad Ribbis, the house should belong to Yaakov.
Husband and wife take the house, put the joint name in, they can take a joint house.
So we're saying that would be a problem, Lechera. I mean, not according to Rabbi Yashiv says it's okay. But if you don't hold... That's what Rabbi Yashiv says. But the other place can say that there's a problem, because the husband's borrowed 50%, the wife's borrowed 50%. The bank can go 100% to the husband. 50% Bateras that you borrowed the money, 50% Bateras guarantor on the other, the wife borrowed. So they're effectively guaranteeing it. So, like I said, there's one problem to sign such a guarantee to start with. And the second problem would be if, in the event, he would pay up the whole mortgage. So, hopefully, in most cases, they have good trauma bias and that won't come about. And they won't actually pay Ribbis. But even signing a Ribbis, it could be a problem. So, it's not necessary, when they make an agreement by an Orev not to claim back, if they pay Ribbis the bank not to claim back, they don't have to do it in writing. They could do it, they agree about pair, but better to do it in writing. So now we come back to the second case where they bought 99% 1%. So again, Reuven took out a mortgage from the bank. He's buying 99% of the house and Yaakov is buying 1% of the house. So in this case, you really have both issues rolled in together. Yaakov borrowed 50% from the bank. That 50%, he used 1% to buy a house. He used 49% to lend to his son. That's straightforward Ribbis Ksutza. So like we said, the Eitzah for that would be that Yaakov should buy 50% of the house I rent out 49 or even 50. Well, he's poor to rent out to his son. But even then, we've only got rid of half the problem. There's still half a problem because they've jointly bought the house and they're jointly liable to the bank. So for that, they'll have to agree that in the event, or should it come, that one of them pays the whole loan, then you won't claim back credits from the other. Just as a side point, there is, by every time you have a guarantor, there is a way of getting around it. That would be if the guarantor wouldn't pay the bank mitzad that he was a guarantor, but he would instead go to the one who owes the money to the bank and say, I'm going to lend you money, go and pay up your own bill. And then you'll come back to me and you'll pay me what I lent you. So then we'll get around the whole problem if you could arrange such a situation. I'm not paying up Batiras Oriv. I'll lend you the money straight out. You pay up your own loan. And then come back to me and I'll... You pay me what I lent you. Is that clear? That's true. Now we're going to move on to a different topic. What is a het iska? Everyone knows, you want to make an investment, you sign a het iska. What is this het iska? Somebody said, I need to write my own het iska, or can I rely on the Rav's het iska? You know, like you rely on the Rav's every tafshilin. If I can rely on the Rav's het iska. So basically, the basic understanding of het iska is that we're changing a loan to an investment. A loan means you Reuven lends Shimon money. Now he's guaranteed to get that money back from Shimon. Shimon owes him money. A het iska means that Reuven is not anymore guaranteed to get his money back. He's invested his money by Shimon. He's no guarantee that he's going to get back his money. Obviously, the way the Gdeila Achrenim, when they instituted the het iska, the whole idea was that people should be as guaranteed on the money as is possible. But there is no 100% foolproof guarantee. If there's a 100% foolproof guarantee on his money, then that's not a het iska, that's ribis. How does a het iska keep the one who's giving the money safe, even though there's no guarantee? So basically, the basic idea is that, let's say, Reuven's invested with Shimon £1,000. So in the regular het iska, 50% is guaranteed. 50% is really a loan. And that on that, Reuven's not going to see any returns. That all the profit is going to go to Shimon. On the other 50%, the one who gave the money, he's fully liable. If the money goes down the drain, he loses it. However, the one who takes the money, the Mekabel, is accepts on himself. He won't be believed that he lost that money unless he brings Edim to Beis Din. And also they work out Be'erach how much profit is reasonable to expect the money to bring in. And if I don't give you these amount of returns, then I have to make a shvua in Beis Din that I didn't make that amount of returns. Now, most people won't make a shvua in Beis Din, or won't be able to find Edim that the money was lost. And Mamela, he'll end up paying. If the money gets lost, I'll end up paying. But obviously, if he wants to come to Beis Din, he wants to make a shvua, can't stop him. The one who gave the money could actually lose his money. With this type of het iska, is also a very important point to remember, is that 50% of the money is guaranteed. That means 50% of the money is really a loan. If it is a loan, then all the restrictions which apply between a malv and a loiver apply. Marshall, Reuven lends Shimon £100,000 to set him up in business. And it was a palg and a palg b'kodin, half is guaranteed, and Shimon did very, very successful, and he really set himself up. Even Reuven gave the money for another year, and now Shimon's a successful businessman, and he's giving Reuven every month his returns, and now Shimon makes a bar mitzvah, and he feels very grateful to Reuven, he set him up. Can you invite him to the bar mitzvah? Be a serious problem of ribbis. He's lent him money, he can't just, if you knew him already and he would have invited him anyway, it'll be fine. Or if because of the loan he got to know him, and because of that he wants to invite him, also be fine. But if he doesn't really know him, and he's only lending him out Sakara Sataif, be a problem of Ribis to give him any benefits.
Even after the loan's been paid off?
That's a good question. After the loan's been paid off. If he's only doing it because he lent him money, then it might be a problem. But that's a good question, I have to think about that one. Another point of Heter Iska is that if the investor knows where the money's been, where the money's been put, he gave him money, invest it in Yana stocks, whatever it is, and he can see very clearly that he lost all the money, then it won't help him now to take the basin and say, you have to make sure you lost the money. If something's common knowledge and he can find out for himself, then it makes no sense to be mechayev mashua. Best idea would be if he doesn't, has no idea where the money has gone to. Another important point is that you can only borrow money by heter iska if you plan on investing it. If you borrow money to make a chasna, and you borrow £100,000 or £50,000 to make a chasna, then what returns are you paying? Best from a chasna will make you returns, it'll get you eniklech, but it's not going to get you money. How are you planning to... What returns are you giving back the malve? Also, another point, just for general knowledge, there are two types of heter iskas. There's a heter iska which is palga milva palga bikodin. There's a heter iska which is kula bikodin. The basic difference between the two is that by heter iska which is kula bikodin, then he's not guaranteed even on 50%. If he's lending, he's investing money by someone who he suspects might want to take up the option of making a shvuah, then he might be, if he wants to trust him anyway, then he will want to use a heter iska, which is palga milva palga bikodin. That way, at least he's guaranteed on half his money. But if he's investing money and he wants very high returns, and the amount of money he's given, he's only allowed returns from 50% of the money. And if the investment can't make from 50% of the money the amount of returns he's asking, it doesn't make sense to make a heter iska. Then it would be more advisable to make a kula bikodin, which means he's investing 100% of the money. And that way he can ask for high returns. Also with the heter iska, which is kula bikodin, you won't have this malve loive situation. He's not guaranteed on any of his money, he hasn't lent him any money. Maybe it'll be simpler according to some poskim to do him tovus. They say of a murder story about the Chassam Sofer. A businessman came one day to Chassam Sofer. He asked him to, I want to meet you privately. He brought him into Chassam Sofer. He broke down in tears. What happened? Everyone knows in Pressburg, this businessman, he's very successful. He's doing very well. He tells Chassam Sofer, I'm bankrupt. Nobody knows, but I don't have a penny to my name. He didn't know what to do. He was beside himself, doesn't know what to do himself. Chassam Sofer said, I'll give you Alvo. I'm not sure if the Gvir came to Chassam Sofer to ask him for Alvo, or the Chassam Sofer offered him Alvo, but he offered him Alvo, and he said, go to the next sale. But Hashem will send you success, and you'll be able to pay back your debts. At the end of the day, he took the loan, and he went out with the bracha of the Chassam Sofer. And he went to the market, the fair. And unbelievable, he has tremendous yatid. Ishmael is very successful, and he managed to make a lot of money and pay back a lot of his debts. He was very, very grateful to Chassam Sofer. When he was by the market, he bought the Chassam Sofer a very beautiful diamond. Apparently, the Chassam Sofer was a bucky in diamonds. And he bought him a very beautiful diamond as a hakar satay for the loan. Came back to Pressburg, Sofer was sitting there with two of his Talmidim. He came back in, and he was full of joy, and he gave the Chassam Sofer the money, and he gave him, says, I brought the Rebbe, brought the Rav a nice present. And the Chassam Sofer picked it up, and he held up the light, stunning. I've never seen such a nice gem before in my life. Beauty, and the Talmidim were beside themselves, one said to the other, tell the Rebbe, it says, Shai Lev Ribbis. And the other one said back, we should tell the Rebbe something. He knows, Kolatari Kulu, back then we know anything. What we need to tell him? But the other one said, it's Shiloh there, is it there? I see, you can't just leave him. Let's wait a second, let's see what happens. And Chassam Sofer studying this diamond. It's Mamash of beauty. And he turns to him and says, oh, but it's a Ribbis. Go and give it to your wife, she'll appreciate it. So, the giver was beside himself. He says, how could I have thought to give a present? How can I not have thought of it? He left it and he went home. The Talmudim turned the Chasam Sofer and they said, my hi, take it, you admire it. Our hearts nearly jumped out of our skins. We're taking rivers. What's going on here? So he said, I'll tell you, Meisa. He said, many years ago, when I was learning by my Rebbe, Nosson Adler, there was a Meisa of Pidyon Shvum, I think it was. And Nosson Adler decided he's going himself to collect the money. And off he went. The people tried to stop him. He was an old man already. No, he went. He had to go to a certain town where they would meet the governor. Off he went, together some sefer, and they got down Erev Shabbos. Where's the governor? He's out of town, he's gone somewhere else. Because there's no time to go there now. So, on Motzei Shabbos, Rosh Adler said, we're getting a carriage, and we're going to find the governor. There was snow coming down, couldn't find anyone who wanted to take them. Rosh Adler said to some sefer, please go and find someone who will agree to take us. So the Chasam Sofer went out and he found a wagon driver who was prepared to take them, two strong horses, and off they went. After 4 hours traveling, middle of the night, that was it, the horses gave up. It was too much for them, they stopped. So they gave the guy some money and told him to go to the nearest town, fetch a fresh pair of horses, start again. They waited there and off he went to find the horses. He came back, say from Nosson Adler, talking and learning, and the wagon driver was busy. Suddenly, Nosson Adler jumped out of the carriage, was in the snow, he left his shoes in the carriage, he was such a rush, in the snow, in his socks. He was dancing, and the Chasam Sofer didn't know what hit him. What was going on? He takes his shoes out and tries to give it to him, and Nosson Adler just points to the front of the carriage. What's going on? The drivers come back with two cows, two oxen. And the Chasam Sofer chaps straight away, last expatriate, Isav Kilayim. So he gave the guy some more money, told him, we can't do this, go and fetch some horses. The Chasam Sofer turned to Rosh Adler, what was this dancing all about? So Rosh Adler said to him, I'm a Rav in a town. I never have opportunity to mekayim this mitzvah of Kilayim. The Rebbe Shlomo was mezakhmi mitzvah gereris mitzvah, was on the way to mekayim this Piddush Shavuim. The Rebbe Shlomo mezakhmi with a chance to mekayim the mitzvah of to be Zohar from the Issa of Kilayim. Chasam Sofer said, the same thing here, I'm a Rav in Pressburg, who borrows money from a Rav? And if you borrow money from a Rav, who would dare to offer the Rav Ribbis? And he had the opportunity of to make the mitzvah, I want to make the most choshev mitzvah as possible. Mamela, he admired it and he took it, and then he turned it back. So I'm sorry, it's a bit early, so we'll make a quick sikkum and then we'll finish because that's why I'm at the end. So basically we spoke out three cases of mortgages. First case of mortgage was when Yaakov took out a mortgage for Reuven, and we said that Yaakov has to buy the house on his own name. Al pi halacha, it should be his own house, and then rent out to his son. The second case was when they bought the house 99% or 1%. So there we had two issues. First of all, he has to buy 50% of the house, and then the guarantee that he's been guaranteeing the other 50% of the house, he has to agree that he won't take back ribbis from the other yid. Then we spoke about guaranteeing in general that whenever two people take out a loan, or whenever one person takes out a loan and somebody else guarantees it, they should make an agreement that they won't take back ribbis from each other. And we said that according to some poskim, this would apply to every husband and wife. Betim is a shrewd thing to say, because you ask anyone who's taken out a mortgage in the last 50 years, everyone, the husband and wife signed, and nobody ever dreamt of a shayla of ribbis. So maybe I have to ask the Rabbanu what they did 50 years ago, but it could be they were saying machon p'sak of Rabbi Yashiv, but according to what the poskim have said, it seems to be a shayla. But the Eitzah wouldn't be so complicated, just agree between them that they won't ever claim back ribbis. What's wrong? If it's just in one name. See? Why is there a problem?
All these things are direct. I'm sorry.